from WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 2008 in our neighboring city of Buffalo. If you wanted to ride a bicycle to work in Buffalo in 2008, you only had 20 miles of bike lanes to work with. Beyond that, you had to hope drivers would share the road safely. But in 2008, the city of Buffalo committed to adding 10 miles of bicycle lanes each year, according to the Buffalo News. And on Sunday, they cranked the schedule way up, Buffalo announcing a new master plan to bring in the total miles of bike lanes to 300 over the next 10 years. It will not come without a cost. Already the estimates are for more than $1 million of work, but Buffalo leaders say they will find a combination of funding sources to cover it, and in some cases they will add the bicycle lanes during the time when they would normally be repairing infrastructure anyway. So what about our town? What about your town? What about Rochester? Rochester had the bicycle master plan first, by the way, but now Buffalo has more committed lanes. Well, Rochester's Bike Week 2016 starts officially on Friday. We've got a kickoff film on Wednesday with the city of Rochester encouraging riders to explore the area by bicycle. They've updated the city's website with an explanation of how the city is trying to become ever more bike-friendly. Is it working? Let's talk about it this hour, and let me go ahead and welcome my guests. First of all, Jim McIntosh is here, Rochester City Engineer. Jim, nice to see you back here.
Good to see you, Evan.
Also here is Dr. Scott McCray, president of the Rochester Cycling Alliance. Hello, Dr. McCray.
Good to be here.
Teresa Boeck's here from Conky Cruisers. Always great to see you, Teresa.
Good afternoon. Glad to be here with you as well.
John Lamb's here from Reconnect Rochester. John, welcome.
Hello.
And Karen Lancasoffer's here. She's a local cyclist. A lot to talk about as well. Karen, welcome to you as well.
Thank you very much.
Karen, are we a more bicycle-friendly city than we were a few years ago? Is the city moving in the right direction?
Yes, I would definitely say so. I see many more people out there on bikes, which is very encouraging. My main concern is the people who don't get on bikes because of safety issues. Oh, I'm afraid to go out near traffic. Oh, I'm not separated from the automobile lane. Or I won't let my child ride to school because he has to cross a major artery. Those are the things that still concern me, but it's very encouraging to see more and more people out there on the roads every day.
Well, listen, competition can breed innovation and good things here at times, and I playfully pointed to Buffalo versus Rochester. It's not an arms race it's not a bicycle lanes race, and Jim McIntosh, city engineer, was saying, hey, they're a bigger city, all right? You know, they're committing to 300 bicycle lanes. Jim, you said Rochester has a commitment to 200 bicycle lanes?
Yes, through our
miles.
I'm sorry, 200
miles.
Thank you, Dr. McCray.
And I guess
200 miles of bicycle lanes.
Yeah, yes. And I guess I clarify that with bicycle facilities because bike facilities are a combination of dedicated bike lanes, the 6 foot, 5 foot lanes that are in the road, and the sharrows, which are just allowing cyclists and cars to share the road and kind of pointing that out to them.
Jim, what's a sharro for people who don't know what a sharro is?
Okay, so in a lane, in a space where you don't have, because of, the curbs being too tight and the traffic, where you don't have the ability to put a bicycle, dedicated bicycle lane in each direction or a cycle track, sharrows are just a way within that 11 to 14 feet of pavement to let cars know that cyclists may be there. So it's the picture of the bike in the lane, and it basically says to share the road, and that's what the sharro. It's an arrow that tells you to share the road with the cyclist.
Okay. So you're looking at commitments to miles of bicycle lane, but facility as well here. And what is the state of Rochester's master plan, which goes back to what, 2010?
Right. So that plan really set us up nicely to understand, and we rated the streets, kind of just like we do with street lights and other things, A through D as to, how bike friendly they were. And we tried to hit the low hanging fruit streets like Buffalo does, streets we already had projects going on. We also had, about that same time, we had a complete streets policy, which says that we have to look at every time we're doing a street, whether we're repaving it, rehabbing it, whatever we're doing, we have to look at all modes of transportation, pedestrian, cycle, and auto, and make sure that we, treat them equally and wherever possible, provide facilities to improve the both pedestrian and cycling experience.
And when it comes to that master plan, we have heard about additional agenda items in recent years, bike boulevards, which we'll be talking about, et cetera. But the master plan itself, I know you can see it online on the City of Rochester's website. Easy to find. If you just Google, by the way, Rochester 2016 Bike Week, you'll find a separate section for that. Then you can link to the master plan if you want to check it out. Up for renewal, Jim? I mean, does it get sort of reworked over time?
Yes. You know, I think we haven't actually have a plan for an actual, you know, redo of the plan, but it is, you know, 5 years out now and is probably something we need to look at. The next piece that we jumped on, which we thought was very important, was the Bicycle Boulevard program, which is, you know, still trying to get that 60% of cyclists who would ride if they felt safe, get more of those riding their bikes. And we feel that the Bicycle Boulevards, which take them through neighborhoods but give them the same connectivity as they would going down an arterial street, makes that easier for folks who might not like sharing the road with 10,000 cars a day.
All right, let me ask the other guests what they think about the state. And just because Jim's here doesn't mean you can't be tough on him. I mean, they want the feedback here. And I'm already seeing
never,
it from...
Never stopped us before.
No, I know, and Jim knows.
That's why we're here.
And we see plenty, by the way, of listener feedback coming in via Twitter, via email. I'll be getting to your comments and questions there if you want. And you can call the program if you want, toll-free, 844-295-TALK. 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Teresa Boeck's here, and we have talked about not only your individual story, but the story of Conky Cruisers and the efforts you've made in your own neighborhood, but looking at the way bicycles are functioning in the city of Rochester. Better? Is it getting better? Is it easier to function on a bicycle in this city?
Oh, absolutely. There's been an increase in bicycle use, primarily in Northeast Rochester, where the Conky Cruisers operate. Our headquarters are at the corner of Conky and Clifford, and we ride out of the Conky Corner Park. Increase of bicycling, as I told you when I started Conky Cruisers 4 years ago, basically because somebody thought I was running from the police. So the idea to see people exercising and cycling in the neighborhood is a norm. There's more visible signage around, and people are making great use of the El Camino Trail. So bicycling has definitely been improved in our neighborhood.
You're describing, I think, two separate things which are important for any city that wants to be more bicycle-friendly. First of all, is the city itself creating not only space for bicyclists, but using whatever laws it can to make sure that bicyclists are safe. And then second of all, just culture, a culture change where drivers understand bicyclists will be there. Bicycling is not viewed as sort of an outlier or a liar or something strange. And on the culture side, you seem to be saying it's getting better.
It's absolutely getting better. And one of the things that we're doing, particularly in the area, is we have a team that's preparing for the Tour de Cure, a ride that focuses on raising funds and awareness for diabetes. Our team is at about 120 as of yesterday, and 10% of those people have diabetes. So they're red riders. They are riding. And what I really want to emphasize with that group of people is to ride out your disease, learn the signs and symptoms, and do something to empower yourselves. So I'm using bicycling to empower, teach, educate, and as a health tool to help people really improve their lives.
And you've seen more people who want to get involved with that. We're going to be mentioning as we go throughout this discussion the various events that are coming up. Bike Week is coming up here. Tour de Cure, you just mentioned. How do
Absolutely.
People get involved with that if they want, Teresa?
They can go to www.diabetes.org/tour. The Conky Cruisers team is called the Rock Unity Riders, and we are really just connecting people in Rochester. Anyone is welcome to join our team, and our emphasis is really about the health and awareness of diabetes, a chronic illness that affects every system in the body, and we really want to use bicycling as a health tool and to teach people how to take better care of themselves, and we've been successful with that. Evan and I have had people come off of their diabetes medication. I've had people come off of hypertension medication. I've had insurance premiums cut in half because people are cycling and losing weight and becoming aware and making those changes that we so desperately desire to happen when it came to cycling and health.
I loved hearing from Sam Schwartz when he was a guest of Reconnect Rochester when he mentioned that there's never been a machine invented that is more efficient in terms of motion than the bicycle. So efficient motion, not a lot of wasted energy, and as Teresa said, good for your body. But let me also read a comment, one of the first comments that came in this hour. John came from a listener named Caleb, who says, just wants to make the point that lanes aren't necessarily a perfect equal bike-friendly. So essentially, Caleb is saying, adding bike lanes doesn't automatically make you bike-friendly, that it's more than that. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. As a former racer, I don't even use bike lanes sometimes. I'll just take the lane if I don't feel that the bike lane is necessarily safe. I know that Main Street is up for redesign. And they're planning on putting in an extra, I think, 58 parking spaces. And they'll be, if they're successful, highly used. And that means drivers will be opening their doors, and I probably will not be in the bike lane because I don't want to get doored. So,
is that a verb that I've never heard of? Getting doored? Is that a verb?
Oh, someday. Everybody in bicycle
and
world knows doored.
Have you been doored before?
I have not. I've come close.
Anybody on this panel been doored before? No?
No.
You've all avoided
it. One quick thing.
Grab that mic, Scott. Bring it closer.
Riding in a bike lane, you really, people want to ride to the right on a bike lane, but it really probably is safer to ride on the left side because of that. If you're on the left side of that bike lane, you're much less likely to get doored and surprised by a car. So, as long as you ride straight and are predictable, you should be pretty safe in that bike lane. Let me just point out, and I'm going to add to, you know, I'm interested in public health as well, in the tremendous potential we have with bicycling and walking and getting people back into exercise. The tremendous public health potential. I've been working with the CDC and some of the members of the CDC after a recent National Bike Summit. Basically, we're looking at the health benefits versus the safety risks. And the health benefits outweigh the safety risks anywhere from 5-1 in San Francisco to 77-1 in Barcelona, Spain, where the infrastructure is very, very bike friendly. But my point is, you're safer on your bike seat than you are on the couch because of all the health problems of immobility, not moving around, the diabetes, weight problems. So you know, the more we can get people walking and biking, the better. In Holland now, the childhood obesity rates are 5 times lower than the United States because these kids, when they're young, they're either biking or walking to school, and there's just tremendous potential for us to get our communities out. And we are in a competition. We are Sam
Schwartz. You view it that way?
Yeah, we are in a competition, and the mayors of cities all around the country. Now, I do a lot of national sort of overviewing, and the mayor of Indianapolis, who's a Republican, the mayor of Oklahoma City, who's a Republican. They both are very much into building biking, walking infrastructure because they realize that their downtown area in the outlying areas, those areas are much more competitive for drawing in the best and the brightest, the young creative class, the millennials. They want communities where there's good biking, walking, and transit.
And what John is describing is sort of the push and pull that is natural between bicyclists and motorists, but more parking spaces to you equals less bike friendly? Is that an equation that's fair?
I don't know that they're directly trade-offs, but in the case of some designs contexts, you know, where they're adjacent, yeah, they can be, you know, they can contest for space, right? There's a limited amount of space, and you want to make sure that what's being built works for everyone.
Okay, so tell me then, John, if it's not a perfect correlation to more miles of bike lanes equals more bike friendly, though obviously it's not going to hurt, but Buffalo's getting the ink, they're getting this headline. What is it that a city can do that's most important to become bicycle friendly?
Build infrastructure. When I was in Buffalo in August, a delegation from the Cycling Alliance visited. Byron Brown, mayor of Buffalo, he wanted to go gold from bronze as a league for American bicyclists, bike-friendly city. And so that big jump from bronze to gold, I don't know that Mayor Byron Brown understood how many tens of millions of dollars that would have required, but he announced it anyway. And then later on, I read that they were going to go to silver. But who knows? Maybe they do have found a way to find money and go gold.
Well, here's a comment from a listener on Twitter about infrastructure. He says, looking to move to Rochester from D.C., but lack of quality network of bike infrastructure is actually a big deterrent. Protection from motor vehicles is key. Unconnected, unprotected bike lanes won't cut it for most. Plenty of excess road capacity in Rochester to do it right. Jim, is that fair?
Well, yes, compared to Washington, I think, you know, the one thing that they have in a lot of their streets is a much wider right-of-way than we have, so there's a lot more room to do these things. But you know, circling back to, you know, making it safer, if money were no object, you know, the Main Street plan would put the, you know, cycling behind, you know, outside the parking, closer to the building. But that means, you know, changing curbs and doing some other things. And so it is a push-pull, not only between, you know, what's you know, the best and the safest and getting people out there, but also, you know, the budget that we have for, you know, a particular project. And, you know, we would rather do something to promote cycling than not do it just because we don't have the money, can't get the perfect solution. But I agree with John that, you know, it is much better to have protected cycle lane or a cycle track versus a bike lane in the street.
And Mikey on Twitter is saying, first of all, he writes, he says, I have been doored on Alexander Street. Not a pleasant experience. Smashed my phone into tiny pieces. Sorry about that, Mike. But he follows up to say, I want real bike infrastructure. Sharrows don't count. That's tough. But, you know, I mean, does panel agree? Sharrows, does that count as real bike infrastructure? Karen?
I think that anything which makes motorists more aware of cyclists count. And I want to get back to the word competition. That's where I think we should not have a competition between motorists and cyclists or pedestrians. We should be in a peaceful coexistence mode. Cyclists should not run red lights. Cyclists should not cross lanes. Cyclists should follow the same rules as the motorists. On the other side, the motorist should respect that we have a right to be on the road.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because I've had experience now for 3 years on this program. I'm going to hear from somebody this hour who's going to share a story about a bicyclist who was out of control.
Yes.
And they're going to say,
sure,
all you bicyclists, you know, you want us to be safe.
Exactly.
You've heard that.
Exactly.
We don't
exactly.
deny it, Evan. We don't deny it. We know we exist.
You're not saying you're one of them, are you, Teresa?
I'm most definitely not one of them. But one of the things that recently happened is the 3-foot passing rule passed in the New York State Senate. And we so desperately need this legislation to pass in the Assembly. So we are really reaching out.
What would that do? Explain for our listeners.
What that will do is when we're passing, a motorist is passing a cyclist, you will have to, by law, pass with 3 feet. That way, it's a more of a safe passage for the cyclists and for the drivers. So we are desperately asking for support of this legislation in the New York Assembly. It's just passed in the New York Senate. So if you're listening and you can be of assistance and support of this legislation and this bill, we need this to happen for the safety of our cyclists and for the safety of our motorists.
Makes sense to everybody on this panel, I assume.
Absolutely. At least 3 feet or not less than 3 feet is actually the wording. Because if, you know, if a car is going by you at 60 miles an hour, 3 feet feels very, very uncomfortable. We wanted a safe passing distance, but at least 3 feet.
Scott, are these laws in place in other places?
Yeah, they're in place in about 26 other states. Similarly, what this year during the legislative cycle, we're also trying to get an e-bikes legislation in. Currently, there is no legislation regarding e-bikes in New York. California just passed a e-bike law that allowed e-bikes to be on the street. It's the quickest growing in Europe. It's the quickest growing bike market. And, you know, it allows people that are disabled or older or don't want to go up that big hill every day without a little bit of assist. It allows those people the ability to do that. And actually, it extends their range. The e-bikes typically go up to a maximum of 20 miles an hour with the Class 1 e-bikes. And so we're pushing to get that through the New York legislature as well.
And let me just ask to follow up there, and I'm talking to Scott McRae, the president of the Rochester Cycling Alliance. Laws sometimes are meant to deter behavior. And the question is, do you want to legislate? Is there a reason for this law? Is there a need for it? And will it actually influence behavior? Do you think this would make bicyclists more safe, this law?
Yeah, I think it does. It just like the Sharrow actually educates motorists that bicycles are going to be on the street. What happens is, I'm from Portland, Oregon, where I lived for 17 years. Now Portland, anywhere between 7 and 10% of the population is biking to work. And it's got 5 times the number of millennials moving to the city than the average American city. So they've been very, very successful. And so by creating awareness in terms of minimum passing distances of 3 feet, creating awareness about the availability of e-bikes and the acceptability of that, and these other laws, we're really gaining a lot of acceptance in the community. At the National Bike Summit this year, one of the most important things was sort of launched was Vision Zero, which basically grew out of a movement in Sweden to reduce the motor vehicle fatality rates to zero. And the interesting thing is when I've been meeting with the CDC officials and talking with them, basically, we did the calculation. If we reduced our motor vehicle fatality rate to what Holland is, the motorist fatalities for motorists are 3 times lower. For bicyclists, they're 3 times lower, and for pedestrians, they're 6 times lower. So they're dramatically lower. If you actually apply that 32,000 motor vehicle deaths in the U.S. and over 2 million injuries in the U.S. annually, if you apply that to sort of the Holland model in the United States, where we really start building infrastructure, we do education, and have good enforcement, we would actually save about 22,000 lives, motorist lives. The motorists are the ones that actually gain the most from Vision Zero and improving bike and pedestrian safety, because that actually traffic calms the motorists and makes it a much safer environment. And when you look at the carnage that comes from motor vehicle fatalities and injuries, it's huge. And it's almost like a big elephant in the middle of the room that we don't really deal with effectively.
And so as we talk about bikes versus cars, it's an appropriate time to mention that Rochester Bike Week, I think, officially starts Friday, but really there's a kickoff Wednesday. Wednesday night, tomorrow night at 6:30, the Little Theater is showing a film called Bikes versus Cars. And I'm wondering if someone on the panel can at least tell us a little bit about it. I don't know if anybody has seen it yet, but...
Is available ahead, online, but okay. We would encourage people to come and visit and see it in the theater, because in addition to having Bikes versus Cars, we'll have two documentary shorts, in addition to a panel discussion talking about what we can do here in Rochester to improve cycling. So Scott has talked about how other cities have made their cities more bike-friendly, and so this movie follows a few advocates and activists across the world to see what they've been doing, and it's a chance for our advocates and bicyclists here to learn and see what they do.
Okay, let me get one more listener questions in real briefly, and then we're going to get to your phone calls in our second half hour, and we'll tell you about more about Rochester Bike Week, which is coming up here. Tony writes to the program and says, Evan, I feel bike lanes are pointless for a couple of reasons. Number one, I feel 99% of cyclists don't know and or don't follow the rules of the road that cyclists fall under. There is a number of cyclists that do, but their numbers are minimal. And number two, I'd love to see a study on commute times prior to the introduction of bike lanes and after. I'd venture to say the lane reductions on streets like East Avenue and University Avenue have slowed travel times for cars due to the reduction of car lanes and the introduction of bike lanes. That's from Tony. Jim McIntosh, what do you think? City engineer, go ahead.
Yes, I think, you know, the data we have, you know, disputes that there's really, you know, slowdowns, you know, when East Ave, you know, a real example there, we had 2 10-foot lanes, neither one of them actually comfortable to drive in. People were, you know, there were a lot of accidents along that corridor. And so that isn't even a bike lane, actually. We just changed that to one lane in each direction with a kind of a long parking lane, which people are using as a bike lane, and we're glad that they are. But we haven't seen, and even when we did our two-way conversion study for Clinton and South Avenue, the total time loss that was projected, you know, all the way from the south and the north side of the interloop was something in the neighborhood of 4 seconds, you know, by changing to one way in each direction to 2 lane in each direction. But it certainly has changed that, you know, the neighborhood dynamic along St. Paul, you know, where the Hive and all those kind of things are happening. So I guess I don't agree with that. I, you know, for all of the bike folks you can find not obeying the law, and you know, we have a big issue here with education that we have to deal with, both with you know, pedestrian crossings and all kinds of things, getting people to do the right thing. There are as many cars that are, you know, cutting me off as I'm riding my bike for exercise in the morning and you know, whenever else I'm out on it. So you know, it's both sides of the equation there, but certainly the cyclist would do well to, you know, we'd help ourselves if we ride like we were cars.
Let me also say, before I let the panel tackle the first part of Tony's point, which I don't think they're going to agree that 99% of bicyclists don't follow the rules, and as Jim says, I think they're going to think that's strong. But Tony, there was something that I think is probably counterintuitive, but one of the most interesting points that Sam Schwartz made when he visited Rochester and was on this program, which is that this isn't true in every case, but a lot of the time, if you add more car lanes, it doesn't necessarily increase congestion. It just encourages more people to drive in that spot. Likewise, Schwartz has said in New York City, they've had spots where they've taken away car access, and it hasn't created huge traffic jams. Sort of cars go where the lanes are. So this notion that, you know, reducing a lane here and there for bicyclists is going to make commute times, you know, take forever. Jim, at least from what I'm seeing, and again, not true in every case, but a lot of the times cars go where the lanes are. Is that true?
That's true. And you know, before we got into this whole, you know, well before 2010, the county who does the city's traffic engineering had done a study back in, you know, 2004 or 5 talking about streets that, you know, were eligible for road diets, you know, which is what we call that when we, you know, reduce lanes. And most of the streets that we're adding bike lanes to were in that study back in 2005. So this really, in a lot of cases, is not a bike thing. It's a thing that we would have done anyway.
Yep.
Just to right-size the street for the traffic and not have people pulling around or going too fast, because by having too many lanes, you encourage going over our 30-mile citywide speed limit.
Which is exactly what Buffalo is saying that they intend to do, as they try to add about 200 miles of bike lanes that they announced this week. They're going to try to do that organically when they're doing infrastructure changes anyway, and then look for places where bicycle lanes make sense. But briefly, John and Karen, he says, Tony is saying 99% of bicyclists are not following the rules of the road. Would you say it's 99%, Karen?
I would disagree. And I know in my particular case, I am a supervisor at an after-school daycare center where I do a lot of education with the kids and the parents. I do bike rodeos, I do bike trips with the kids in the summer, and I ride my bicycle all over Henrietta. And I know the minute I break the law in Henrietta, there's going to be some car next to me with one of my kids sitting in it saying, uh-oh, look what Karen did. So I make sure, I go out of my way to stop at the red light, stay in the right place. And I also make a point of thanking motorists who give me my right of way, even if it's my right of way.
Give a little thumbs up.
Thumbs up. I wave, eye contact, I mouth thank you, because I do truly appreciate when someone respects my space. And I do my best to, as I say, to follow the law as exactly as I can, because I know people are out there watching me, and I should be. If I want other people to cycle, I should be a good role model.
John Lamb with Reconnect Rochester.
What's gone unspoken here is that the laws are written for the dominant mode and that they favor cars. For example, as a cyclist, I have cleats, and if I have to stop for the red light, were it not for the speed of automobiles, there'd be no need for this expensive infrastructure of stoplights. But because I'm cleated in, I have to then uncleat. There are some intersections for which I have to act as a pedestrian and go and press the stopwalk or the crosswalk button in order to get a green phase in the signal. And so that, you know, things like this discourage cycling, and they're written mostly for the dominant mode. States like Idaho, for example, have a stop law that allows cyclists to go through a red light if there's no traffic, and they can treat stop signs as yield signs. And so for cyclists who are cleated, or for that matter have other toe clips, or you're simply just not to lose the momentum by coming to a full stop as required of cars, this helps cycling because it's not really dangerous for cyclists not to come to a full stop.
Is it also fair to guess, though, that in Oregon the culture is a little more progressed than it is here, to
this
the point where you can trust
Idaho?
I'm sorry, oh, it's Idaho. Okay. But is it, you know, could you trust bicyclists here to go through red lights where it's appropriate, where there's no other traffic? I mean, is that a good idea?
I think cyclists have the most to lose in a car bike incident. So, yes.
Okay. I bet you the phone will ring on that one. I'm not going to ask Jim McIntosh to weigh in. He's saying, go to break anyway. We're late for a break. Let's do this. Let's take a short break, come back to your phone calls, and we'll make sure that you are plugged into Rochester Bike Week 2016. We already mentioned that tomorrow night at the Little Theater, Bikes versus Cars is showing at 6:30 p.m. There's going to be a community, a panel there, a forum, a discussion on these issues, and they invite you to go out to the Little Theater for that. And then Rochester Bike Week, easy to find it online, and we'll talk about some of the events and other issues related to that coming up next on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, University of Rochester astrophysicist Adam Frank is my guest. He is the co-author of a new paper that creates an equation designed to set parameters on how many intelligent civilizations have ever existed in the universe. So what's the number? Is it just one? Are we alone? Are we unique? How would you go about even setting those parameters, looking for life in the universe? We'll tell you next hour. We've got a fight going on now, so it's on. Teresa Boak's jumping in here. No, it's not a fight. I think it's John's comment about, do we need to get to a point like they have in Idaho, where bicyclists have the option of going through red lights if there's no traffic around, and which he says is especially favorable for bicyclists who are sort of clipped in. Teresa, you don't want that, do you?
I don't want that right
now. Why not?
I really have spent a lot of time teaching my cyclists to follow the rules of the road, and that would be direct contrast in everything that I've taught. We're just, the culture is just not ready for that. You know,
I'm not advocating that cyclists automatically adopt Idaho stop laws. That's something we have to fight for in the New York State Legislature. And it's getting the laws changed here so that that is permissible.
That's your right on red for cyclists, in a
sense? So right turns on red are already permitted for most modes. The Idaho stop laws differ on is allowing cyclists to treat stop lights as a stop sign. And
like
to treat,
a four-way stop.
Yeah, right. As long as there's no traffic as a four-way stop.
You look and give the right-of-way for anybody.
It actually moves
the stopping to one level lower. So if it's a traffic light that's red and there's no other cars, and a lot of times bikes can't trigger that light, and so then it gives the bicyclist the option. There's no cars in the area. The pedestrians are clear. The option of using it as if it's a four-way stop sign.
Yes.
And the same thing at a four-way stop, the bicyclist can take that and use it as a yield sign. If there's no other traffic and no violation of any other vehicle's rights, then the cyclist can move ahead. And so it makes it more easy for the cyclist to actually do it. The problem here in Rochester is I think we're not quite ready for that culturally, as Teresa has said, because we need to educate the motorists in terms of good, better behavior, and we also need to educate our bicyclists. I've ridden in Amsterdam, where in Holland actually, where if you do something wrong, they give you a tss, and there's a whole culture.
Was that a laser? What was that? Was that a
no? That's not my laser.
What was the sound there?
It's a it's like a shaming thing because somebody has done something.
Oh, it's a tisk.
Yes,
but it's not like a ticket.
No. They tisk you, and because they have a biking culture there that has some pretty strong rules. And if you violate them, as a bicyclist, other people are.
It's a strong culture, publicly shamed. Yeah.
Yeah, and so we need to develop something similar to that in terms of good behavior on both sides of this equation. And in terms of the movie, I think, you know, hopefully the sequel is going to be not bikes versus cars, but bikes and cars and how they work together. Yes. Because, Jim McIntosh over here is really interested in smart streets and where we're going. And I think that bikes are an important part of the equation of what we do to make a livable city. But the transportation world is changing dramatically with driverless cars and things like that. It's going to make it a lot safer for pedestrians, bicyclists, and for the motorists themselves.
All right, let me get to some of your phone calls just because we're loaded up here. We got a lot to work through in the last 20 minutes. This is Paul in Irondequoit. Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, you use words like the dominant mode, the e-bike. How come there's no license or insurance on these people? I'm all for it. I live on a street that's totally into bicycles, a main street. I just don't understand why they're not contributing to the infrastructure that they want to use. And that's my comment.
Thank you, Paul. So, John Lamb, go ahead.
So it turns out that most of the costs or most of the funds for infrastructure project comes from our income taxes. And so cyclists, in the sense that they work, they pay income taxes and contribute to the infrastructure.
Okay. Any other comments there, Scott McCray?
Yeah, I mean, the auto industry and the fuel industry, the oil industry are heavily, heavily, heavily subsidized. Even the parking lots that we drive and park in, those are heavily subsidized by what we buy. So I'm also a driver. I drive a car. I ride a bike. I pay taxes. It turns out that we can reduce our costs tremendously with less potholes, better quality streets, by building better bike and pedestrian infrastructure. Because to build more, we're only funding probably about 40-50% of the roads that need to be funded. So we've overbuilt in a sense. And the more we can turn to biking, walking, pedestrian, transit, those streets become much smarter. They become much more effective and it reduces our tax load. Jim, you want to comment?
Yeah, I'd have to agree, especially in an urban setting where, you could, get up to those numbers, 5-7% of folks, riding a bike, that's, 5-7% fewer cars. Streets would last longer, the parking spaces would be more available, all those kind of things that reducing the number of the cars, coming in and out of the city would help with.
Okay.
It reduces the rush hour bulge, and that's a big problem for traffic engineers as well.
All right, Tom in Rochester. Go ahead, Tom.
Well, maybe we should have defensive driving for bikes also. And the other thing that I've always noticed is that when I'm on the expressway, and I'm doing 55, everything on the highway passes me like I'm standing still.
So
as far as the doors opening and stuff like that, if you're riding far out, sometimes the cops are after you for not staying in the so-called bike lane.
Tom, thanks for the phone call. He's saying, how about a defensive driving class for bicycles? Karen, what do you think?
Wouldn't be a bad idea, but I think the education should start in the schools, in the phys ed classes. That's where we should start. These kids should be learning safe biking habits.
You're saying that culture
young.
Has to start young.
Absolutely.
Don't wait till
Absolutely.
They're teenagers,
Absolutely.
Adults, and then expect them
Absolutely.
To go away from sort of a car-dominated yeah. mode of thinking.
The idea that a bicycle is only a recreational vehicle, this mindset has to change, that it can be used to get you from point A to point B safely, should be more instilled.
Scott McCray, go ahead.
Yeah, so, the other thing is we really need to educate motorists about appropriate behavior of cars on the road. And, one of the things that we can do on a statewide level is to incorporate the bike education about motorists and how to deal with bicyclists on the road into the educational programs for our teenagers. There are a number of things that motorists need to understand in terms of, and bicyclists for that matter. One of the most common problems we have is a right hook, where a car sort of passes you. It's going simultaneous with you or alongside you with you and decides to turn right. And there's two problems with that. The number one is that bicyclists can't stop as fast as a car. And number two, the motorist misjudges thinks it's going slower than it actually is and cuts the bicyclist off. That's actually one of the biggest problems. We need to educate motorists, not to right hook. And we also need to educate the cyclists mm-hmm. well, especially if a bus or a truck is there. Do not kind of get parallel to that bus or truck or car, especially if it starts slowing down, because that's a signal that you're going to get right hooked. And those can be very, very bad for the cyclists. So
fatal.
And they can be fatal. That's actually the most common thing. One quick thing, in Portland now, the bicycle fatality rate has been zero for the last several years, basically because they built the infrastructure, they've done the educational piece, and Portland's twice as large as Rochester.
But every year, I think we have a couple bike fatalities. And so, once you build it and once you educate people and you get that critical mass of people out there, it becomes safer for everyone, essentially.
Alan writes to us on Twitter, are bike lanes just for bikes? Are skateboards, rollerblades, or scooters allowed to share? Anyone want to jump there?
Skateboarders can use bike lanes. Skateboarders can use the bike boulevards, too. What happens, actually, with bike boulevards is in Portland, when they built the first bike boulevard, the neighborhood was really up against it. And then eventually, the neighborhoods are now competing to get bike boulevards because it brings people out on the street. Their kids can be out in the street, and they're safer. The cars aren't going 20, 35 or 40 miles an hour. They're going less than 20 miles an hour.
Again, you're talking about bike boulevards.
I'm talking about bike boulevards where they put traffic calming things like either gentle speed bumps or a roundabout or one-way pass-throughs for the bicyclists to go through, but the cars
more
can't
signage,
go.
If I remember. Jim McIntosh, city engineer, what else goes along with a bicycle boulevard, and what's going on in Rochester with that?
Sure. We just completed our first ones last year, and those included, some modified speed humps so that the bikes could get around the outside of those speed humps, more signage, both directional signing at kind of the biker scale, so, you know, they're not relying on the 300-foot ahead sign. It's much closer to the intersection, telling them that they can, this way to Cobbs Hill Park or to Wegmans or whatever, signs to help them get where they're going. And it also, slows the traffic in those areas when they know that it's a bike boulevard and there's signage along that street.
Are there plans for more bike boulevards?
Yes. We have, a network that was identified in the Bike Boulevard Master Plan, and we're implementing those at a clip of, somewhere in the neighborhood of, 30 or so miles a year. We redo streets and as funding allows, these first ones we did actually weren't planned when we planned to mill and resurface, Harvard and some of those streets and Hillside where we have bike boulevards. But once we had the study done and said, gee, these would be great bike boulevards, we incorporated that into the project and got those done, last year, like 6 months after the plan was in place.
Okay. Jim, also a question probably up your alley from a listener this is via email. Are there any plans to develop a bike lane to get to the city from Fairport? Fairport Road, which turns into East Avenue, is a dangerous bike ride.
Well, the city doesn't, obviously, we're, just focused and we're working with the towns to try and make sure, certainly with the town of Brighton, to make sure that the cycle track gets extended from, right next to the U of R on Elmwood. Their bike master plan shows that getting taken all the way to their town hall on Elmwood, which would, be a great facility. And we'll complete our parts within the city, and hopefully they'll get funding, to do their parts. Coming from Fairport, I know East Avenue, that section of East Avenue is a little bit, rough. We're still looking at that. Is there some way we can provide, bike facilities there? Around the Wegmans area where our bike facilities are in University, and we made, until you get up to Probert Street, past Wegmans, then we have, bike facilities that get you between East Avenue and University, mm-hmm. Contraflow bike lanes, those kind of things. So there are things we can do, but we don't have one planned.
Okay, go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, so one of the big challenges is the city has been terrific in terms of building their bike master plan and acting on it. One of our biggest challenges is basically we've gone out to other regions surrounding the city, including Pittsford, Brighton, Henrietta. They all have most of them have bicycle master plans, thanks to Genesee Transportation Council's support. And what we really need to do is to connect these master plans and connect the systems together. That's our biggest challenge at this point. And so the listener really has a great point that in terms of getting that done, you really need to go out and advocate to your local supervisors and key opinion leaders that you want better biking and walking facilities.
George emails and says, seldom mentioned, a bike is naturally unstable when starting from a complete stop. The most likely time for a cyclist to lose control is starting from a complete stop. I feel much safer when I can treat a stop sign as a yield. So a thumbs up from George for John. You actually have, there we
Thank
go.
You.
That's a little bit of love for you. And Chris writes to us with a question on Twitter. She says, does Rochester have any plans for protected intersections? Lots of development downtown, but I haven't seen them.
Right, Jim? So I believe she's talking about protected pedestrian phase, like you see, you know, in Toronto and some other cities where basically all traffic stops and then pedestrians, you know, cross the street and then, you know, you start the traffic signal again. We probably the closest one, you know, in downtown that has that level of pedestrian traffic, you know, would probably be the State and Main Street, you know, intersection. But we haven't moved in that direction as yet. We have what we've done is kind of a compromise. We have a lot of intersections, and again, the county has been great in pushing some of these ideas, and they do our traffic control and design for us. Some of the intersections that we have, pedestrians get a head start basically before any of the traffic goes. So the light changes, the pedestrians, you know, get some time to get across the streets so that they're in the intersection and people don't turn into them, because that's a common, you know, issue that we have.
Okay. One more quick phone call. Harvey, got to make it quick because we've got to talk about Bike Week 2016. Go ahead, Harvey.
All right. Real quick. One is three-foot passing. Hopefully the assembly, Assemblyman Gantz committee will be sending that out to the full assembly for a good vote, for a positive vote. And then Amtrak will be putting bike racks on its one long-distance train, the Lakeshore Limited, sometime in June and July. And people can reserve those bike racks for $20 and travel both to Rochester and from Rochester without having to box their bike.
Harvey, thanks very much for that. Good information. And we've got a few minutes left to let you know a little bit more about what's coming up with Rochester Bike Week 2016. We mentioned tomorrow night at 6:30 p.m., the Little Theater hosting a community discussion, which will be preceded by the film Bikes Versus Cars. But there's a lot more going on. John Lamb from Reconnect Rochester, what else is coming up, especially with the kickoff on Friday?
Yeah, so on Friday, Scott McRae, who's sitting across the table from me, is leading a Light Up the Night bike ride. So decorate your bikes with as many lights as you can and show up at 8 o'clock, I believe.
8 o'clock, and dress warm, usually.
Show up where, by the way?
It'll be at Genesee Valley Park parking lot, right by the recreational center there. So dress warm, because it usually gets a little colder than we think once you're riding around at night like that.
In addition to Rochester Bike Week, there's also the Rochester Bicycle Film Festival. And so the second movie in this series, after Bikes Versus Cars, next Tuesday, so that's May 17th, is Half the Road. And that's a movie documentary about the women's professional cycling team and how they're struggling, almost like the women's soccer team, for equity between them and the guys. And so there's also many other rides during Rochester Bike Week, and the best way to find them is on Facebook. Go to Rock Bike Week on Facebook and go to events.
Piece of cake. A lot there. Karen, what do you want to leave the audience with? You came in here and you wanted to talk about safety. We've talked about that in various ways this hour, but for you, I think you made an important point earlier. It's not just recreation. That bicycles have to be viewed in different ways. What do you want to leave the audience with?
Two things about events coming up.
Sure.
One, think that the first weekend in June, the 3rd to the 5th, is National Bike Travel Weekend. Get on your bike, ride to Palmyra, ride to Spencerport, stay overnight, see the things in the towns along the canal. And in September coming up, we are going to do a Women's Safe Cycling Summit to specifically address the problems that many families, women, feel about the safety issue and riding. Of course, men are invited, but just be aware that we're going to concentrate on women's issues and feelings.
All right, when and where for that, Karen?
That is going to be September 10th. It will be held in Henrietta, and details will be coming later.
Okay. So a lot going on this week. Teresa Bowick, great seeing you. What do you want to leave the audience with as we think about bicycles?
As always, I really want people to connect bicycles and health and understand that you can ride out some health issues on your bicycle. The Conkey Cruisers will be once again joining City Councilman Adam McFadden for a ride next Thursday night, and we're leaving from Bull's Head at 6 p.m.
Okay. Scott McRae, some quick final thoughts from you.
Ditto on the bike health issue. A lot of people are trying to diet, but there actually was just a New York Times article in the editorial section that dieting alone doesn't really work that well, that you'll gain the weight back. But when you diet and exercise, it's much more successful. So get out there and bike and walk. And I'm from Portland, Oregon, and saw the same transformation in Portland that Rochester's going through. So we can do it here in Rochester. Go Rochester.
Thank you, and thank you to Jim McIntosh, city engineer, for all the information on what's going on. If we jump online, easy to find, again, as we said, easy to find what's going on in the city regarding bicycles.
Yes, it is. Yep, it's right on our website, cityrochester.gov, bikes.
Very good, cityofrochester.gov, and you can find the bike master plan and more information on Bike Week 2016. Thanks, everyone. Thanks for the conversation this hour. They're heading off on their bicycles. I'm staying here. Astrophysicist Adam Frank is next on Connections.